I have social media anxiety. I freaking hate social media. I don't know how to be on it as me, Christy from Flip City Mag. So what I did is I created a character and made that her social media. And it's there's something in it. There's some kind of psychological thing that happened to me where I'm like, okay, this is just Kitty online, you know? And she's very, very friendly and loves commenting on things and all that kind of stuff. So that's what's helped me.
Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Iron Age Marketing. I am Nikki P here, as always. My guest today is Christy at Flip City Mag. How are we doing today, Christy?
I'm good. How are you, Nikki?
I'm getting to talk to people about stuff that I enjoy talking to people about, and that's about the best the day can get, I hope.
Yeah, I do that. I do that too. I'm trying to, basically part of my marketing plan right now is to start getting known within the Iron Age. So I'm super happy that you invited me to come on your podcast.
Good. And then, we're going to focus also, we're going to focus on getting everyone out of the Iron Age. That is currently what I talk to most of my clients about. It's great that we got our little insular group. We need to start attracting more people to read the books, though. If we can't just be taking each other's money. We need to be taking other people's money. That's the goal.
Right, exactly. And see, I guess I've done it kind of differently because we're in our fifth year of publishing right now, and I'm dipping my toe into the Iron Age because so that's my way of expanding my reach. Is now I'm kind of going to jump in Iron Age.
So you didn't start out kind of in the Iron Age. Where did you start doing this? What was the I guess the inciting flame to how this whole thing began?
The inciting flame for us, few different reasons why we started Flip City Magazine. Number one is we're somewhat political people, not that our magazine is overly political, but we follow trends. We kind of see what's going on with government corruption and all that kind of stuff. And my husband and myself wanted to use his illustrative and writing skills to kind of push back on mainstream narratives and expose deep state and all that kind of stuff. We're kind of conspiracy theorists too. So we yes, we're actually just noticers, So we decided we came up with several different ideas. We were going to start doing maybe some animations and try to build an audience on YouTube, but that is time consuming. And my husband also has stacks and stacks and stacks of ideas of just funny stuff to do. So we decided to basically make a magazine and start developing our concept in, or his concepts mostly, in real time in print. And also because like the traditional Mad Magazine type of satire magazine really doesn't exist, especially if it goes, it's this type of content supposed to be subversive, and Mad and Cracked and things like that stopped being subversive long ago, So it was time to be subversive again. So that's how the concept developed. We found relatively fast success because we got a couple of online influencers to be excited about our product. So we built a decent little audience pretty quickly over the first 2 years. And the last 2 years, because we just finished up our fourth year, the last 2 years it's been a little more difficult within the truth and freedom movement to get people talking about us. I'm like, oh, okay, it's time to find the people that really like physical media and comics, because we're in that realm. And this whole time I was kind of watching, you know, hashtag ComicsGate, and it felt like gatekeeping and kind of cringe and stuff. So I just watched it to try to figure out what was going on over in the ComicsGate thing. Then I saw Richard at Iron Age or the Anvil magazine. I saw him posting somewhere online. I'm like, hey, this is really interesting. So I went and looked at his website and really loved his mission statement. And so I contacted him and started learning about what Iron Age is. And I freaking love it. You know, it seems way less gatekeepy or click like, and it's just kind of a movement. Cause I'm also kind of about freaking indie movements too. That's what I'm passionate about, is seeing indie new stuff.
I'm a raging leftist, if you ask me. So I don't care what your politics are. I think everyone is better suited to release their own stuff. Stay away from anything corporate. Just find a way to do it yourself. The episode before this is, as Brian said, you know, no one cares about your stuff as much as you do. So you're going to end up doing most of this anyways. It doesn't matter. Maybe you'll get some money behind you, but it's still, you're doing all the work. You might as well collect all the money from it if you can. So you say you came from like the broader like truth and freedom movement. How do you find your way into that place?
Well, how do we find our way in the truth and freedom movement? Like, why is your question, like, why are we there?
Well, no, I'm kind of curious, because I would say describe myself as a leftist. Somehow I found my way to Tom Woods at some point. And how does someone find themselves from going to reading Noam Chomsky to Tom Woods? that's its own. He is a hardcore Misesian right wing pundit, I guess. But to me, he's just a libertarian. But for me, well, I guess what activated me politically was having a daughter. And it kind of pushed me to, I started caring about things I hadn't cared about in years before, because like, I'm all of a sudden, oh my God, what am I leaving my kid? Like, what kind of world am I leaving her in? Like, I've got to do something to help push back on some of the insanity I'm seeing around me. And that kind of all like really began when I was excommunicated from my D&D group for political reasons. And all I said is, I don't think we should punch Nazis in the face unless they're like actually attacking us. And that was enough, apparently. Lost all my friends, lost my gaming crew. And that kind of snowballs into eventually all of a sudden I'm, you know, a hardcore right wing anarchist. But for you, how did you find your way?
Isn't that the way? Isn't that the way? Yeah. Well, okay. So for me in particular, and it has a lot to do with my husband as well. When we first started dating, this was back, like a year after 9/11, right? And I think at that point, both of us were pretty left, because we were younger, you know, and in Southern California, born and raised. So we were both kind of left leaning people.
Well, it was the right wingers that brought the Patriot Act. Does anything going to activate anyone politically? I mean, that's what you do, right?
Right. Well, that's exactly it. And I never, until I met my husband, I never paid attention to anything political. I just want to party and have a good time, all that kind of stuff. I'm like a normal person in their 20s. And on like our second date, I said to him, I said, you know, I just don't feel like they're telling the truth for 9/11. And he went, oh my God. And then he turned me on to Alex Jones. So I started listening to Alex Jones, and like my mind was freaking blown. I had no clue of like the level of corruption and all that kind of stuff. So I was never really, it was kind of like, I never felt like I was politically activated, just kind of more like, oh my gosh, we're lied to all the freaking time. And then, you know, for two decades after that, I've just been jumping in rabbit hole after rabbit hole, and my tinfoil hat keeps getting bigger. This is about how big it is right now, so you can see.
Looks like a tinfoil chef's hat. I like that. You're combining a few things.
Yeah, this is a newer one I made. I decided, because I use these for my podcast, I have a conspiracy corner that is very fun and hilarious. And I decided over the next several months, I'm just going to keep making different tinfoil hats and choose which one I want to wear for that conspiracy corner.
You're more than welcome to talk about what you're, at least mention the name of your podcast since we're here.
Oh, yeah, of course. So I started a podcast. I just did my 13th episode last night, and it's called Creative Chaos, and it's all about featuring what I say, fascinating people creating fantastic things outside the mainstream. So really trying to get creators on my show. It's a 1 hour real quick stream, kind of tightly formatted, and it's about having some laughs, you know.
Well, I'm gonna tell you right now, you're very glad you met me then, because I'm gonna make sure you have
time. I met you.
You're gonna have content for a long time now, thanks to me.
Oh, I'm so excited.
All right. Well, so we've talked a little bit about how the magazine came to be. We've talked about, you know, your journey into this world. Tell me a little bit more about what the magazine is. One thing that is different than you guys don't crowdfund. You do sell the magazine, like actual subscriptions of a physical magazine from your website. Is that the only way you do that? Or do you get involved with the crowdfunding websites at all?
Yeah. So we actually just kind of started dipping our toes into crowdfunding to see how it goes. Because I realized it was kind of a mistake to not do it earlier, because there's a lot of networking opportunities in crowdfunding. You get to make a lot of friends, and it's a great way to build your audience. But when we started, we kind of were like, snooty, we're too good for crowdfunding. We're just going to do, you know, our subscription model and build it, build our community from basically getting to know online influencers that are going to love what we're doing. That has worked, and it's still continues to be part of our marketing plan to, you know.
It's one of the pillars that I would recommend anyone do. It's part of the relationship building, is finding people that help you get your name out there. So.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we are just wrapping up our second campaign exclusively on Fund My Comic. In fact, I think it might be closed by now. But I am learning a lot about how to market a crowdfunding campaign. So my next one, I'm going to be doing a lot more planning in advance before I launch it, and doing podcast tours and stuff like that to hopefully build hype. And it's been fun though, like not trying that hard to market the crowdfunder, because it's interesting. And it's interesting because we do a lot of the marketing for our website, and I'm like, okay, how am I going to work this where I do want people to still purchase through our website, but at the same time, I need to also let people know that we are having a crowdfunding campaign. So I'm kind of navigating those waters right now.
Okay. Yeah. When I talk to people, it's always like, oh, we sell on Amazon. I'm like, okay. You don't want to not be on Amazon, because it is the biggest store on the planet. But you really want those people buying from your website, where you're collecting the email addresses and you're collecting all of the sales data on them. And you really don't want to split the money with somebody else if you don't have to. I think it's good that you started where you did. Like, I do agree that there is a certain a benefit to the relationship building that goes into crowdfunding. I also think it helps kind of really articulate the sales cycle for people that, you know, aren't experienced with it. Like, there's a way, like, there's an end date, there's a scarcity element to that, there is a get it while it's here, where while this is up there, we're working only on this project. It helps you really focus on one product at a time as far as a release goes. And certainly when people are new, there's no sense of like doing that. It's just kind of throwing things against the wall and hoping somebody buys something.
Kind of like that, you know. And what really kind of pushed me over the edge to start the crowdfunding thing is we didn't want to go on the controlled platforms of Indiegogo and Kickstarter. So when I saw Fund My Comic was a thing and weren't going to censor us or shadow ban us or things like that, I'm like, okay, now is the time. Let's jump in and start trying this crowdfunding thing out. Not that I haven't crowdfunded before. Back in 2014, we successfully crowdfunded a documentary. So we have a little experience in it.
No, that's awesome then. What exactly is Flip City Mag itself? Like what is inside the pages of this thing?
Okay, so Flip City Magazine is a comic satire rag that kind of takes the shit out of mainstream narratives. And I don't know if I'm going to mess up my camera because I do want to just bring up a magazine. Okay, cool. So this is our latest edition. It is a physical print comic satire magazine. It's a variety magazine, really. We do publish in every edition, we publish a lead parody, and that's how our magazine always opens. But we do satirical articles, comic strips. So it's not all illustrated content. Some of it is like photographic, depending on what we're doing with it, you know? So it's a variety magazine.
Okay. Like you said, it's more like in line with like the old Mad magazine, that kind of stuff. How big is the magazine? How many different creators do you have in each magazine?
So in every magazine, we probably average about 13 different contributors. But as far as our full run, we have just finished our 20th volume. I believe we have attracted at this point about 30 different contributors. Some of them are regular contributors. Some of them are one-offs. But usually if somebody contributes, they'll come back and do more for the magazine. So, in fact, our only girl illustrator that we've ever had in the magazine, I just interviewed her yesterday. Because one of the regular things that we publish in our magazine is an interview with a contributor. So I had a really nice conversation with her, but she's only contributed maybe 4 or 5 different times through those 20 magazines.
Yep. See, it doesn't matter where you lie. You always find yourself pandering to somebody. It just kind of happens that way. I do it too. I salivate it every time I can find a female come on the other and talk to me. It's like, another dude who's doing something. There's gotta be more women creators out there. Come on.
Yeah. And she's a great illustrator. And it's funny because she's younger and she's a young mom. She's got 2 kids, stay at home wife and everything. But she's a salty bitch, but I freaking love her. She's so mean to me, but I'm also mean back to her. It's just our relationship. I'm like, you're kind of like a young me. I can't believe how well we get along because I don't have a lot of female friends. I like dudes. Anyway, the way I made her, because she was really nervous to contact us. She thought we were a really big thing. And she contacted me and I said, oh, yeah, dude, you'll be the first girl we publish because it's a sausage party around here. I need a girl. And that put her at ease. So we talked about that in her interview yesterday.
People, first rule of marketing, just send the email. There's literally nothing that's going to happen to you negatively. What are they going to do, block your email and then you don't even know? That's the worst it's going to be, I promise you. And I think people don't realize, like, when you're like doing like a creator, like say a podcast, say a magazine, the hardest thing in the world for you to do is find crap to fill the magazine. This has to come out next month and I need to make sure that I've got good content to go in this thing. So like, anyone that can make that easier for you by giving you something ready to go, that's you're the answer to my prayers. Like, please send me more crap that's ready to go so that I don't have to, like, bust my ass trying to find something, frankly.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing, the way we take submissions in all different forms. We do commissions for stuff that we've already written. But we've been getting plenty of people just submitting their like comic strip or something like that that they think will fit with our brand. And then we go from there. You know, it's like, will we use it? Will we not? Who knows?
Well, and what's the worst case thing? It's just a no. You're not going to send him an email like, oh my God, you're the most worthless human being that's ever existed. I mean, maybe you are, I guess. It better be really funny if you do that. Like, it better have a good payoff.
Well, we're a little bit of a salty brand, but I don't think we've been that mean.
There's a difference between being salty and just being a prick, I guess. But yeah, I've never met anyone that's, going to just like go out of their way to screw with creatives like that. So it's always amusing to me, like just the people, they have their own biggest enemy, certainly when it comes into like the marketing side of things.
Well, I think particularly with artists. With creatives, they're probably their own biggest critic. Nobody's going to be critique you as bad as you do, unless you really suck, and then you have a big ego and you don't think you suck.
A lot of like so I'm currently working on a marketing book called The Role Player's Guide to Marketing. And like literally my introduction is just explaining I'm a dork and I watched a bunch of movies and listened to a bunch of music back in the early 90s that made me really kind of hold myself back in life. And all of that holding myself back in life by, I guess, boxing myself into, oh, well, this is the way that dorks act and this is the way that dorks do things. It just stopped me from taking chances. It stopped me from doing the things that would naturally lead you to be successful in life. And they're not complicated things. It's usually just relationship building stuff like talk to people and, don't be a dick sometimes. Like understand like why like, when people are useful and they have things to offer, take advantage of it. Let them know, hey, I think we can work something. Take the chances, make the ask. And that's the biggest thing that I didn't do growing up. And like, I never thought of myself as someone who was worth making the ask. And the bottom line is the only person that can make that decision is you. And so, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's funny. Like, I don't know if you've ever done any like sales or marketing training and all the books and self-help on it. They're all mindset books. It's literally all about how to get yourself in the frame of mind to do that type of work. And I'm because we're creatives, we all come from that self-deprecating, like I come from the musician side of things. That's where I came from. And we're all just, we just think of ourselves as like these weirdos. In the words of Declan Finn, I became a writer because I didn't want to talk to people. Like we box ourselves off, and it makes marketing very difficult because it's like all marketing is going out and finding people to help you do the thing that you love doing. Finding people that love what you do. And if you don't talk to people and you don't meet people and you don't build connections, then no one will ever know what you do to care about what you do. And a lot of time it's just making the ask. It's just feeling confident enough in yourself to show somebody what you do. And until you start doing it, like you're just gonna wallow away in obscurity. So how do you codify that and teach a bunch of dorks and geeks, how to go out and I guess make friends?
That seems almost literally impossible. No. Well,
And I promise you, it's not like I am a lifelong introvert. Like I learned it from being a musician. Like I learned how to turn myself into Nick that's on stage and Nick that is in real life. And I think we all have a little bit of that we can do ourselves, to find a way to at least, make ourselves some aspect of ourselves confident enough to make the asks.
You know, if I may, I'm going to tell a little anecdote because so over we connected over on Twitter, me and you, and my username over there is Kitty Phillips. And the reason I did that is number one, she's much cuter than me, so that might bring in the dorks, right? But number two is, I have social media anxiety. I freaking hate social media. I don't know how to be on it as me, Christy from Flip City Mag. So what I did is I created a character and made that her social media. And it's, there's something in it. There's some kind of psychological thing that happened to me where I'm like, okay, this is just Kitty online, you know? And she's very, very friendly and loves commenting on things and all that kind of stuff. So it's that's what's helped me.
I don't know a single musician, and like we're talking guys that are just playing bars to guys that are playing in big stages, that at the very least, it's an elevated version of themselves. It's like them times 10, you know, they define it, but it's just somebody else. And they go on stage and they do it. Some they'll walk off and not want to talk to anybody. They'll go disappear for hours and get to themselves. But it's like you're setting up somebody, I guess, that can take the slings and arrows. And maybe somebody strong who you visualize is strong enough to do that. Or in your case, you know, someone that you think is going to be more in line with what people want. But everybody does it. Like I have a client that I work with that is a multimillionaire. And I still have to have these kind of conversations with them over like about talking in front of people. It's like, you know, you can tell when he's in front of people, he gets nervous and it's noticeable. And it's like, dude, you're in a Fortune 500 company. Like, how are you, is it second nature? The bottom line is like, we all face the same problems and we all, functionally, psychology works the way psychology works. And there's tricks that you maybe are unique to each person individually that all help to make you function the same as everyone else and get you where everyone else is. Some people are just better at masking it, you know? Stand-up comics become that way because they're used to feeling like crap and they find a way to laugh it off, you know? Me, I'm a musician. I became a stage whore. Like, please put me anywhere. Like, send me the accolades, whatever. Meanwhile, I'm inside freaking the hell. Oh my God, oh my God, everyone hates me. So kind of moving along with the, is there anything that you think is individually difficult dealing with a magazine, say, as opposed to like, you're not putting out a book that you guys do entirely yourself. You're, it's this creative entity of a lot of people making something happen. Do you think there's any, I guess, things that make that more difficult to work with in a create as a creative endeavor as opposed to just your own just voice, I guess?
Right. So I guess perhaps one of the most difficult things that we run up against occasionally is because the way it works, if it's not a fully complete submission, we are commissioning stuff for things that my husband writes for the magazine. What we publish is probably about 80% his writing. And so we'll commission, you know, depending on what we're doing, we'll commission somebody to do the work. So for example, our lead parody artist right now, we should be at print on our volume 20, but our lead parody artist who is, he's reliable. We trust him. But what some of the creatives will do is they won't respond to us until their work is done. So we're just trying to figure out how much longer, but he won't respond to us. It's just how he works. And so it's kind of like, we just need to have trust. It's going to get done. Cause this is like, oh, that's the thing, because we don't even know how many pages he's doing. We don't know if it's going to be 5 or 6 pages. So we need to figure it out for our page count. And
you can't do your layouts, you know, and stuff like that until it's done.
So I guess that might be one of the most difficult things, is because we are working with so many different people, it's like herding cats sometimes. But that's not even anything that really bugs us that much. It's just, you know, it is what it is. And if we need to, we just need to notify our subscribers that it's going to be a little bit later. And probably we won't blame the artist or anything like that. We'll just say, hey, we're a little behind. It's going to be a little bit later.
Production issues, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, as far as development of the magazine itself, that's probably that. Well, that and keeping the revenue high enough to pay for everything.
Well, paying the bills, it's difficult for everybody. It ain't getting any easier right now. I'm curious also, I guess, you guys, you said you came out, you managed to get a couple big influencers to help you out in spreading the word about the magazine. It's a solid way to start any strategy, is to get yourself out there, because at least it gets some of the juices flowing to have, you know, some finances to kind of make it work. Now, it sounds like you've come to a place where your growth started to stagnate and you needed to find some other ways to expand the audience. What way, you mentioned kind of getting involved with the Iron Age movement to start working in with those people. What other kind of strategies are you employing to kind of broaden your audience?
Well, that is my main focus right now, is just kind of making friends in the Iron Age and doing the crowdfunding. Gosh, I guess I'm not really doing anything else. Thanks, Nikki. Now I feel bad about myself.
Well, I wouldn't feel bad about yourself. You're miles ahead of a lot of the people we talk to.
Oh, you know what? That is not 100% true. I'm just being more active online. Like I said, I have social media anxiety. Creating my kitty character has helped me do that. So I'm just being more social and active online and building my following mostly on Twitter. Something that I need to work on is kind of honing down our social media, because we're basically everywhere. And we just need to cut out a few, because they're not giving us, you know, it's not giving us any views. So it's like, okay, I might throw away Gab. I'm probably going to throw away Minds, because it's just wasted time to be posting those places right now.
Late on that one. I gave up Minds 4 years ago.
You know, it literally is a copy paste thing. So it's not a ton of time, but at the same time, you're opening the tab, you're doing this and that. It's like, I think I'm done with mine.
MeWe was the one. Like, because I had a good go on MeWe there for a minute. I'd started up, like, the Jack Spirko, like, homeschooling group. And for a while, I had kind of people interacting in that. And eventually, it's like, yeah, everyone went back to Facebook that's going to go back to Facebook. And if they didn't, they probably just got rid of social media entirely and live out of their homestead.
Right. Well, that's the other thing. That's the other thing too. I've literally just in the last year have been active on Facebook. I'm like, okay, because I had a fellow satirical game designer friend that's like, Christy, you need to stop your embargo on Facebook and just get over there, because there's a ton of people that are going to like what you're doing.
I don't normally tell people to use Facebook, because Facebook does generally suck. But just by nature of working in print media, there's a certain degree to which the older demographic that does sit on Facebook is probably more accustomed and attuned to print media. I wouldn't buy any of their advertising, because that don't work for shit. But knowing that you have a demographic that's going to be better aligned with what you're doing is certainly not the worst place to be.
Well, you know, the best thing that came out of the time that I tried advertising Flip City Magazine on Facebook was we were able to troll out a bunch of hate that then made content for our magazine. That's something, some of the cheapest content that we publish is what our audience responds to the most. And they love it when people are hating on us. And so I'm like, okay, this works. You know, I didn't make any sales or gain any audience. I just like attracted a bunch of like Antifa and stuff to hate on us, but it gave me a thing.
But like we said earlier, if it's helping, if it's something that's like helping you come up with content and generate content, like when you have regular content you need to put out, it is, any help you can get certainly doesn't make life any harder.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me today there, Christy. If there's one thing you'd leave with people to like help them in their journey getting out and finding their audience, what would it be?
If you are an indie just starting out, just know you are going to be wearing all the hats. You know, I think that's probably the best piece of advice I can give. And be prepared. And be prepared to put yourself out there so people will find out about your project. You just got to do it, even if it's uncomfortable.
That includes going to ironagemarketing.com and signing up for an initial consultation with me. It is absolutely free. I am more than happy to give away the first hour talking to somebody of my time to help them come up with as many ideas as we can to grow their creative product or their creative endeavor. So thank you so much for coming on, Christy. Thank you for giving me a great segue there to pitch my own stuff.
Yes.
And thanks everyone out there for listening. Y'all have a good one.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.